Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Make sure you stick around for a breakdown of the day's top stories in the Chicago area at the end of this episode. But first, for a lot of older adults, staying socially connected only gets harder with time. And that disconnection can have serious effects on your mental and physical health. I'm talking about a higher risk of dementia, stroke, and heart disease. But advocates here in Chicago say it doesn't have to be that way. Across the city, senior centers are creating spaces where people can show up, plug in, and be part of a community. They offer everything from exercise classes to line dancing to financial workshops. And for many older adults, the daily connection means something deeper. In this episode, we'll learn how relationships built at senior centers grow into support systems that feel less like programs and more like family. At the table was Yolanda Curry, Deputy Commissioner for the Chicago Department of Family and Support Services. Alicia Henry was a Southeast Regional Director of Senior Services for the Chicago Department of Family and Support Services. And Janine Sharp, who's a senior citizen participant. Yolanda kicked things off by describing the types of social isolation that these programs are trying to address and by digging in further to the impact. Here she is.
Social isolation, in particular coming out of the pandemic, really has adverse health effects, which most people wouldn't necessarily correlate social isolation with health. But one of the most kind of dangerous, hidden dangers for older adults, right? And we are social creatures as human beings, and socialization really plays a huge part. Like, one of the quotables that I really like to lean into is, when we talk about social isolation, it is more dangerous, right, than smoking 15 packs of cigarettes a day. Ooh. In terms of the health effects for older adults.
Yeah, well, that's a good one. And that's actually really eye-opening to know that social isolation is that linked to physical health, because I don't think people see it that way. They just think of it as maybe a mental health scenario. You know, you're feeling lonely, you're feeling left out of things, your family's off to do this, and you're staying home and watching television or just not a part of what's happening. Right. But this can save your life, being more connected.
It really would. I mean, it really does. And in addition to that, too, it's just the quality of life, right? And so what you hear a lot of people is, maybe I've retired and I'm kind of around the house and not doing a whole lot, not necessarily a lot of engagement. Family members living life, kind of doing what they do. And then you kind of figure a lot of people start experiencing decline. Mm. What we've seen is, when they come back to the senior center environment, they begin to thrive again, right? They begin to enhance their social networks, engage in things, learn new activities, and build other friendship groups.
Let's talk more about this. Alicia, tell me the mission of your senior center. What's your North Star?
So at the Southeast Atlas Senior Center, we have really, really grown our community. When I came on board 3 years ago as the regional director, it was my mission to really grow the participation. And so what I've learned is, it's not a lack of resources, it's a lack of communication. And so I got into the community. I made sure that older adults, community partners, delegate agencies was very aware of who we were and what we do at the Southeast Atlas Center. And so with that, we have like tripled our participation. Mm. We've grown a community of seniors that's invested into the center. They have made it their own. It's home away from home for a lot of our senior participants. They're there with me day in and day out. On the weekends when we're doing outreach events, I have senior ambassadors that have really, really joined into the mission of really creating a healthy, safe environment for older adults to enjoy themselves, tap into different activities and programs, and enlighten their skill set. And so it is a wonderful, wonderful environment. It is like an extended family.
Yeah, well, this makes me look now at you, Mrs. Sharp, because Alicia said something interesting there. She said that seniors these days are very invested. And I know that that sort of defines you and your role these days, because your week is stacked with activities. Walk me through what you do at your senior center each day.
On Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, I go to aerobics class.
Okay.
On Thursday, I do drama class. On Wednesday, I do karaoke.
I love it.
And I also volunteer for everything. And when we pass out the food boxes to seniors, I'm right there helping pass them out.
So you are the definition of invested. And it stands out to me because I hear, you know, your first bouts with senior centers weren't so good, right? You thought nothing much is happening here. I'm a little bored. Tell me about how you made that transition.
Well, I had retired in 2014, so I had gotten a little bit bored at home. But I actually went to the senior center to find out about the reduced license plate sticker. And when I came in, the staff was just wonderful. And the woman at the desk at that time, her name was Juanita, she said, let me show you guys around, me and my husband. And she took us around, and we were so impressed. Now they can't get rid of me.
Well, you say you're all like family.
Yes, that's what we call each other, extended family. We lift each other up. You know, some people are going through different phases in their life, you know, and you go there and you have such support, you know. And I lost my sister last year, and when I came in there, everybody was so supportive and everything that it really helped me get through that time.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
So it is nice to know that folks were there for you through that, and it sounds like other things. What else has it done for you? What difference has it made in your life and your husband's? You mentioned him as well.
Well, I was like sitting at home and everything, and I'm a people person, and I love fun. So when I go there, I can let go, you know. I have so much fun, and like I said, the people that I sit with all the time, we're sisters and brothers.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's missing, we're looking for them.
Right.
You know, we want to make sure that they're okay. So it's family. It's just family.
Tell us more, Alicia, about this growing community that you've witnessed happen.
So post-COVID, what we notice is once we open our doors to activate our activities and programs in full blast, we wanted the seniors to participate, but there was some hesitation. And so what we did was we created activities and programs for the seniors of their interest, but then we also made sure that the seniors that were participating, they spread the word. They explain to others how safe it was to be in our environment, to make sure that when they step into our facility, there is an aroma of freshness. They know that it's a clean environment. There are smiling faces by our staff that, like Ms. Sharp explained, we have staff that are greeting participants as they walk through the doors,
nice,
giving tours of the facility, vibrant colors of the facility with our wonderful wall paintings that's have been created by artists right at the center, wonderful centerpieces. And we have such a great staff and senior participants that are invested in making sure that the facility itself looks and feels exactly how we have created the space to be.
And Yolanda, we're talking right now about the center on the southeast side, but I mean, there are centers across the city for folks,
right?
That is
correct. We have 20 senior centers around the city of Chicago. We have 6 what we call the bigger regional senior centers, and then we have 14 satellite centers. So what we like to say is if you've seen one senior center, you've seen one, right? And just as diverse as the city of Chicago is and its neighborhoods, so are kind of the interest, right, and kind of the feel and flow of senior centers, because it really is the communities that the participants make, right? And we really try to tailor a lot of it to the local interest in terms of programming.
Mm-hmm. And so at what age can folks start accessing what Mrs. Sharp is talking about, these classes and all these resources?
Right. So for our satellite centers, it is 55 years of age, right?
Oh.
And so for some folks, they're like, hey, I'm a pre-senior. Well, in our world, you can kind of come in and
do 55-year-olds know that they can do this?
They do. We do have 55-year-olds that go. But for our regional senior centers, it is 60 years of age or older.
So we've talked about the fun things, Alicia. You also provide resources, as I've been mentioning. So tell us more about what that looks like.
So we always say that we're a resource hub. So when you think about a senior center, aside from programs and activities, we bring the services in. So such as the Cook County Assessor's Office. So if you need assistance filing for your property exemptions, Chicago Greater Chicago Food Depository is on site helping all of our senior participants if they need to apply or reapply for SNAP benefits and Medicaid. We know that those benefits are now, you know, having some changes. And so we want to make sure we keep our participants informed, educated, and make sure that they have the services right on site. And so we bring in several city partners, community agencies to make sure that our seniors are educated, especially with the health and wellness portion of it as well.
Right.
And so we have a wellness team with Rush University. And so a lot of our nurse and our social worker and our dietitian, they also have lunchtime talks, which bring in topics and they have conversations with our seniors.
About
and
nutrition.
They educate them. Mm-hmm. Yes. About the nutrition, about different health conditions so that they're able to learn about preventative measures or how to maintain and live a quality life.
And the seniors are receptive to this?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And they have questions and they do their homework and they do the research and they make sure that they're understanding and they sharing the word with each other.
Mrs. Sharp, you're nodding. You agree?
Yes, definitely.
You like these resources. Tell me more.
I love it. They have a caregiver support group.
Which you participate in, right?
I do participate
in. What's that about?
It's about, a lot of times it's seniors that are taking care of seniors, their husbands, their mother, mm-hmm. their grandmothers, things like that. And it's really helpful because you get with people that are going through things that you're going through. So you don't feel alone in your journey, you know. And it helps you to understand what's necessary to actually be a caregiver, how it can be so stressful. But it helps you to understand what things you can do to alleviate some of that stress.
What's it been like for you? Balancing that, being a caregiver, trying to be social and active and keep yourself healthy and well?
Well, for me, I go to the senior center because somebody told me that I go there like it's a job, and I tell them I go there because it's my peace. Mm. So it helps me to let go of stress and I have so much fun. I just have so much fun when I'm near it. Sometimes you forget that you have
it's an escape.
Some worries. Definitely. It's definitely an escape.
And a release.
Yes. And yes, it is. And I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Earlier this year, Yolanda, the state rolled out this multi-sector plan to make sure that seniors and caregivers and adults with disabilities are thriving. So it's called Engaging Illinois. What else can you share?
It is a statewide initiative, right? And they have four pillars with regard to the plan in areas that they really want to address, which is creating livable and connected communities, which is what we feel like we definitely do here in the city of Chicago. Even I think our quarterly publication for activities is called Chicago Seniors Connected. Mm-hmm. And so it really is trying to make that connectivity point for seniors across the city of Chicago. In addition to that, it is really about ensuring health for all ages, and those are like key pillars, right, of the programs and services that we provide at the city, and then investing in our caregivers like Ms. Sharp, right, and really kind of working on initiatives that makes aging a little bit more affordable. Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about, you know, something you alluded to earlier, right, these senior centers being part of preventative care.
Right. So what we feel like, if we can get to a person as they age in, we want to immediately make that connection, right? We feel like, you know, coming into this network, this hub, right, kind of puts you on a more positive trajectory of aging, right? And people can plug in as necessary as they need programs and services. So sometimes it can be a lead-in service, such as getting your income taxes prepared, mm-hmm. right? Or people coming in for a bus card, and then they walk into the building and they was like, well, I really didn't know what this place was like and what you had to offer. Mm-hmm. And then they see all the wonderful programs and services mm-hmm. because there's a lot of misconception about what a senior center is, right?
Tell me what that sounds like.
A lot of folks feel like it is like nursing home environment, right? And that, or they'll be 75 years old and be like, oh, that place is for the old people, right? And you're like, Well, you should come check us out and see what this experience is. And what you will find, it is as vibrant as a recreational spot for a 16-year-old, right? So people are plugging into programs and services, delving into their interests, and again, building, you know, social connections and building social networks. And all those type of factors really are key to building, like, positive aging.
Do you find, Mrs. Sharp, that you're having to dispel those myths sometimes and tell people, come on in, it's fun, you should try it?
Yes, I do. And I tell them, you're missing out. Because we have a good time. We do Soul Train, and we go on trips, and we eat, and we dance. And I tell them, you need to just come for yourself, because they offer so much.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a gym where you can go work out. They have pool tables and card playing and art and so
I want to come.
It's great. It's great. I enjoy it.
And let's be honest, Alicia. I mean, people... No matter your age, people don't always like to leave their house, right? For a variety of reasons, right? And I wonder how else you work to entice them to just come out and visit the center.
One of the things that we do is we send out email blasts and make sure that people are aware. So they're sitting at home and you see this email come through with all these activities and programs. We go out and we do outreach like I spoke about previously.
Yes.
And I encourage people to come out and I sell them on the Senior Center. And so I always tell them we party with a purpose. So we have a great time. We have videos and pictures of our seniors. And I always tell them when they come into the center, come and see me. And when they come and see, I'm always out and about and all over the place. And so when they come in and they get, and I sell them on the sensor, explaining to them who we are and what we do and the different activities and programs, who wants to come to our senior sensor?
Sure. Yeah. And if people mention wanting a class, this is what I find cool about you guys, and say the class isn't something that you offer right now, you do your best to try to make it happen.
Yes.
And you also recruit people to become leaders and become teachers. Tell me more about that.
We have a wonderful senior participants that have great skill set. And so that we encourage them to utilize that skill set. And so when they ask of different activities and programs, either themselves may have the skill set, or we tap into the skill set of some of the other participants. And we have created each day, each room in the facility has its own ambience, its own vibe going, because there is an activity, program, or a class in each room of the facility. And so we have really, really grown the participation. Most days we cannot find extra room for for additional classes. And so right now we're kind of putting a hold on additional classes and activities because we're literally at our capacity.
That schedule is jam-packed. So I leave us with this, Mrs. Sharp. You know, there are a lot of people listening right now, right? And I want you to talk to your peers who might not be taking advantage of what these centers have to offer. What do you say?
I tell them to come out. Just come out and just take a minute to see all the activities that we have going on there. You'll find something there that piques your interest, I guarantee you. And you'll be like me. They won't be able to get rid of you.
That's Mrs. Janine Sharp, who's a participant at the Southeast Regional Senior Center. Alicia Henry, who's Southeast Regional Director of Senior Services for the City of Chicago. And Yolanda Curry, who's Deputy Commissioner with the Chicago Department of Family and Support Services. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Now to the top Chicago area news stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and arts and culture reporter Courtney Kippers. We started with some sports news. It's baseball season. The Cubs are on fire. The Sox are doing much better than recent years. But there's also this never-ending saga over a stadium for the Chicago Bears. Here's Claire with the latest on that.
So lawmakers are reconvening today at the state Senate to sort of discuss how to keep the bears here in Illinois. Governor J.B. Pritzker calling a recent properly taxed relief plan that ended up being worked into a House bill that was passed aimed at keeping the bears here. He called it negligible in terms of what the savings would be for property taxes. Mm. So his office released an analysis that revealed that the average savings that that plan would provide to homeowners across the state is just over a dollar. He actually compared it to a cup of coffee's worth of savings. Oh, that's wow. From the voice of our billionaire governor. But the tax break plan for the bears passed out of the House last month promised that it would offer sort of this big relief to homeowners, not just in Arlington Heights, but across the state.
And so
That's not so true. But the team has said that it will make a decision on moving the bears from Soldier Field, as we know, either to Arlington Heights or Hammond, Indiana, by late spring or early summer.
Come on with the decision already.
So there's about 4 weeks left, legislatively speaking, for them to come up and to pass some kind of realistic plan that, you know, show me the money, right?
Exactly. And Courtney, if the Bears do move to Arlington Heights, what does this mean, you think, for big concerts at Soldier Field or at the new stadium?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question that sort of remains to be seen. I mean, the Park District has put this plan out there to overhaul Soldier Field and make it a year-round concert and event venue. But, you know, if there's this state-of-the-art facility not that far away, will headliners get booked there instead? Will they keep going to Soldier Field? We also have seen the redevelopment plans at the United Center, so it's possible that more gets attracted there as well. So I think we will see what happens here.
Well, and with the Chicago Fire moving to the 70s, you know, they play a lot of their games at Soldier Field.
That's
as
right.
It is. So that would also be going away. So
question
they're really
for the future
right,
of that
running out of
venue.
Options of who's calling Soldier Field home or what.
Yes. Yeah, a stadium needs a purpose.
Something
really
has to happen inside, right? Well, Courtney, I've been excited to talk about this. You're here, so I know we're going to talk about it. I'm referring to the Met Gala, which was last night, one of the premier nights in fashion, if you're unaware. It happened in New York, as usual. There was also the Chicago Does the Met Gala event. Tell us what this one is all about, our local version.
Yeah, we've started to see this more and more in recent years. Of course, the main event in New York, but folks in Chicago really want to like show up and show out. So there were a couple of different events last night. There was one over at the Palmer House, and then there was the Chicago Fashion Coalition. They held an event for the fifth year, and it's a fundraiser for Chicago-based designers. So it's really sort of always a debate whether Chicago is really a true fashion city, but some folks were putting us on the map last night.
They were definitely stepping out in style. And WBEZ's Summer Van Benton was there. Let's listen to some of the folks she talked with.
When you think about fashion and the Midwest, a lot of times people don't connect the two, but it's so many fashionistas from here, but they just move to different places and blow up.
We don't get to choose our bodies, but we get to decide how we decorate them.
For someone like me who's trying to figure out where you fit, I've talked to maybe three or four people tonight and they were just like, you absolutely fit and we've got a spot for you. And so if you're looking for a space in the fashion world, if you're just looking for a community period, this is the place to be.
Yeah, so that was Kiara Bond, Marquand Jones, and Dave Martin, who are three people who took part in Chicago Does the Met Gala. And, you know, I'm struck by your comment, Courtney, because it's true. You know, people don't think, and I think somebody said in the clips, people don't think of Chicago when they think of the fashion scene or
totally.
Making a mark when it comes to the world of fashion. Why is that?
Gosh,
the Midwest
I don't know.
Seems to get
it's
lost.
Cold. We got to wear our puffer coats and boots.
We
as
do
part
coats
of it.
Like nobody's business.
I think it's the laid back sort of vibe of Chicago. We're also, you know, very working class.
Totally.
That is sort of our identity. We're come as you are, but I think we're seeing that a lot of young people, like you just listened to, are putting that emphasis on individuality.
And
what you wear reflects them.
Self-expression. And I should say, we're going to have photos online later in today. So check those out. We got some photos from that event, which are really fun.
WBEZ.org. All right. So let's talk about the night in New York, because there were some looks, you know, Gaga or Katy Perry, Beyonce, Rihanna, all these looks. I mean, what stood out to you ladies? Courtney, you first.
Okay, I loved Sabrina Carpenter's look. She was covered in these film strips that was filmed from the movie Sabrina, which I thought was so amazing. And then the videos of her and Stevie Nicks performing inside, I'm like, oh my gosh, love it. And then Chase Affinity, who's got the Chicago connections, she went to Columbia College here in the city.
Oh, that's right.
She was wearing this beautiful, colorful Tom Brown dress, which was like, it was her Met debut, and it was totally different for Tom Brown. We often see suiting from him, and I just thought it was beautiful.
Inspired by the Venus de Milo.
Ooh, and let's tell folks the theme. This year was costume art. Fashion is art.
Yeah,
which threw me off a little bit because I'm like, isn't that the theme every year?
Totally. I know. I kind of agree.
Isn't that the theme every year?
Because it's the Met, right?
Right. Yes. Are we doing these costumey looks every single year?
Yes.
Right. I think it allowed people to really take that literally. We had some people who were wearing imitations of paintings on capes or jackets, right? And then we saw a lot of sort of sculpture. We saw a lot of,
yes.
Heidi Klum was dressed as a marble statue, which was kind of, you know, the literal interpretation.
Serena Williams did a statue look as
Serena
well.
Serena Williams looked
Did you see
lovely.
That?
And Venus, silver, they were both there.
They were both there. And yeah, I just remember seeing Serena's really, you know, silver statue look. I loved Co-Chair Beyonce's dress.
Fabulous.
I mean, what was it? Sort of a Lady Liberty.
Gem-encrusted, yes.
It was so skeleton. Lovely. The headpiece, too. I think a headpiece is always a win at the Met.
The jewelry, the emerald green. It was just a showstopper for
and
me.
And Blue Ivy Carter being there. It was a family affair. It was so lovely.
14 years old, walking the carpet at the
so
Met.
So poised.
Let's talk about that for a second, because how?
Following in her mother's footsteps.
Jeez, that
child. Well, at $100,000 a ticket, we should say. And some people get invited, but it's the broken record for how much a ticket was for the Met Gala was this
huge
year.
Fundraiser for the museum.
Totally.
They make so much money during
Maybe
this
that's
night.
What Chicago needs to do to get us on the fashion map, Courtney. Art Institute needs to start throwing its own gala.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
For $100,000.
You'd be behind the scenes.
I'd love it. Count me in to cover it.
In your flats, though, because you're a reporter.
In my flats, in a black dress. You see all the press people in black on the car.
Let's give honorable mention to the men who showed out last night, too, at the Met. Coleman Domingo.
I know, he looked really lovely.
He always does.
He does.
When does he do fashion wrong, ever?
I thought Russell Wilson and Ciara looked amazing.
What was that, an Egyptian?
As a couple, they are
just
always
goddess.
So lovely.
It was incredible.
And A$AP, Rocky, and Rihanna were also
very good.
And very fashionably late. I love that they're
9:15.
Is that when they showed
up? The live stream had ended. They're like, we'll show up when we get there.
Oh, I mean, but that's fashionable.
You restart the live stream when Rihanna touches the carpet.
It's true.
All right, Claire, let's talk about our e-scooter safety plan. What's up with that?
Yeah, so scooters are already everywhere, and the city is predicting there will be even more this summer. So they're launching what they're calling an e-scooter safety campaign. Essentially, the Department of Transportation just wants to improve rider behavior so people kind of know the rules, know the scooter etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want to strengthen parking compliance. Mm-hmm. So just so people have a better idea of not just leaving your scooters. We see them scattered all over the city a lot of times, impeding sidewalk, pedestrian traffic. So they're going to be teaching some school programs, also expanding bike lanes to maybe include a scooter section potentially in some high congested areas where a lot of tourists are, and providing additional scooter-specific parking in some of these high traffic
areas. I'm hoping
areas
that helps with this patchwork of regulations that we've seen across the region, right? Every town is sort of making their own rules. I kind of just want to see us all come together on this.
It's just there's so many rides being taken already this year. Just Lime and Divvy e-scooter trips alone have already broken a million
I'm
rides.
Sure.
Wow.
Speaking of safety measures and ways to get around, fans and security, they got into it at Chop Shop. This is a music venue in Wicker Park. And that way to get around that I'm talking about, crowd surfing. Courtney, tell us more.
Yeah, during a recent all-ages emo show at Chop Shop, some fans were removed for crowd surfing, and then the concert was actually shut down early. They canceled the rest of the show. And the venue says that they were just enforcing their safety policies, but fans took to social media and said that security was acting overly aggressively toward both fans and performers. Mm. So it really raises some questions about all-ages shows and what's allowed and how venues host those types of events safely.
I like this quote from an audience member who was like, well, this is how we dance to music, you know, leave us alone kind of thing.
Yeah, some real tensions there for sure.
Well, all of this is coming at a time when, 3 out of 4 indie venues in Chicago aren't profitable?
Yeah, that's according to a report out earlier this year. It's a tough moment for venues. There's rising artist fees, higher taxes, soaring labor and production costs. And then not many places host these all-ages shows either. So this is
That's one of
the few where young music fans can go and enjoy. So yeah, it's a tough moment for the music industry for sure.
Back to the world of sports, Claire. The Bulls, they're hiring a new executive vice president of basketball operations. What should we know about Bryson Graham?
Yeah, he's the team's new executive VP. He spent this season as Atlanta's senior vice president of basketball ops. And that was after a 15-year run in the front office of New Orleans that saw him go from just being an intern to the general manager of that camp. So he's no kid. In a statement, the Bulls are giving him sort of all control. They will say all decisions made for the Chicago Bulls will be made by Graham. So, you know, that's kind of giving him a lot of credit off the bat.
What's up with Chicago and Atlanta swapping?
I know. Angel Reese gone, and now we're getting Graham out of this. But, you know, he's got to find a coach. That's his main task, agenda item.
Billy Donovan's out.
He's going to have an introductory presser this week. We know Sherway Stout will be there. So certainly we'll hear more from the man himself and what his plans for really trying to turn this franchise around. That's putting it lightly.
Yeah, absolutely. What other stories are you watching?
Well, as you mentioned at the beginning of the hour, Sasha, the White Sox are hot too. Cubs are on a roll, but Munetaka Murakami hit his 14th home run. That was against the LA Angels last night, 6-0.
Something amazing.
He is a slugger. It was a two-run blast in the fourth, and he remains tied. This is just kind of newsworthy. Remains tied with Aaron Judge, New York Yankee MVP. We know him well. Currently leading the entire league in home runs.
Wow.
But what's cool too is Murakami also had a double. It's his first double of the season. You know, we've been talking about, is he just going to be kind of a slugger? Is he only going to hit runs and strike out? No, it sounds like he got his first double. So maybe he can do it all after all.
Making Claire a White Sox fan.
Maybe.
Courtney, as our resident arts and culture expert, I got to get your thoughts on this performance from a Lincoln Square sixth grader. Let's listen.
Please tell me what's your favorite dinosaur. Dinosaur names can be complex, but most kids I ask just say T-Rex. The name sounds cool, and Rex means king, but being a T-Rex just ain't my thing. The size of its teeth and jaw are stunning, but they had tiny arms and you could always hear them coming. But it's all a gas where you could crawl and dash. You could fall and crash unless you're small and fast. Tyrannosaurus Rex had all the fame, but I like a little dino with a really long name. It's a
Microbachycephalosaurus, a Microbachycephalosaurus.
Honestly, it's a bop.
It is a bop. So that is JJ Kayum, aka JJQ. He is 11 years old, folks. His dad's a well-known musician and composer here in Chicago. And he says he wants to follow in his dad's footsteps. What do you think, Courtney? I think he's on his way.
It's so sweet. I love the family generational dynamic of this story. It's really sweet.
This song is so good. I mean, if you want to check out the full thing, it's on TikTok.
It's really fun. It's so, really, really fun.
So good. He's got lyrics too, right?
He's
got bars.
100%. It's really fun.
What other big stories are you watching on your beat?
We're looking ahead to Memorial Day weekend. There are three music festivals across town that weekend. So I'm just sort of curious how the city is preparing for that and would love to hear from folks if they have questions about how that's going to work that weekend.
Well, here's something I've got my eye on. The Pulitzer Prizes were announced yesterday. I'm sure you heard. And Chicago area novelist Daniel Krauss won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. This was for his novel Angel Down. It's a 304-page story about World War I, and it's somehow told in one long sentence. Yeah, wild, right?
Wow.
Yeah, we recently talked with him here on In the Loop. I want to play a little bit of Daniel describing the process of writing Angel Down.
There's a sort of speed you get, a sort of pace that you get into that where it's almost stream of consciousness. And that by sort of its very nature writes kind of quickly because you're writing along with the speed of your thought.
Excellent work. Congratulations,
amazing,
Daniel. We've been talking with WBEZ's Claire Lane and Courtney Kimbers.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.